Hi, and welcome to the Solari Wellness Series. This is Brigitte Mouchet, and my guest today is an osteopathic physician, Dr. Harry Friedman, who is a fellow of the American Academy of Osteopathy. Dr. Friedman teaches internationally. He's helped set up osteopathic programs for physicians in Germany and France. He is co-founder of San Francisco International Manual Medicine Society. He has co-authored a book, Functional Methods, and a series of three instructional manuals. Dr. Friedman, welcome to the Solari Wellness Series.
Thank you, Brigitte. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Full disclosure, I've known Dr. Friedman for about 15 years. He's the only doctor I see regularly, and for me, that means once or twice a year. And he's done magic for me. Dr. Friedman, I invited you to this interview because osteopathy has been so helpful for me, whether I was dealing with stress, jet lag, or an injury when I was a weekend warrior. And so many people still have no idea of what this work is about and how powerful it is. So what I'd like to do during this interview is for you to explain your work as much as possible, and at the same time, give people new avenues for taking better care of themselves and grow stronger and healthier, which we all know is very important right now. To get started, I'd like you to share with us what your definition of wellness is based on what I read on your website. You seem to have a very good idea of what wellness means. Shall we start with that?
Well, okay.
Sorry, surprise question.
Well, I have to think about the answer now, but that's okay. So, you know, traditionally, wellness is defined in less than desirable terms as merely, you know, health, you know, the absence of disease. And, you know, it's really not a very expressive answer that speaks to what wellness really is. And osteopaths are focused on helping the body to achieve wellness through its own natural system. So it's a form of natural medicine that incorporates the assessment of structural problems and problems with the fluid system of the body to enhance those things so that wellness is more of a natural result of living. And so, you know, breathing is, of course, a very fundamental aspect of wellness, but wellness is essentially a state of vitality and optimal function.
Mm-hmm. On all levels, right? Not just physical.
The body, mind, and spirit are certainly addressed specifically in the osteopathic literature. So yeah, there's a definite multi-layered approach to the whole person that incorporates more than just what's going on physically. Yes.
Uh-huh. Good. So if we go back to osteopathy, from a very high level, I think we can say that osteopathy focuses on the flow, to increase vitality, which then helps the body to heal itself. And the quote I chose from this interview is something you said when we were preparing for this. You said, when you increase the fluid potency and decrease the tissue resistance, everything is flowing and decompressed in your system, and there is more vitality and less drag. So I think there is a lot to say about this. Can you elaborate a little more?
Of course. Yeah, I like that. So, you know, the human body is made up of fluid and tissue. But in order to understand how fluid and tissue are relevant, we have to look at the general container or structure of the body, which involves something that we've all learned to hate, which is geometry. Mm-hmm. So geometry is more important than you might think, because living things are geometrical structures. And geometry matters. So we are mostly cylinders and spheres, our body three-dimensional makeup, and those are the containers in which our tissue and fluid function. The container is important as a reference and a general empowering framework for the tissue and the fluid to function at their optimal level. So what am I talking about? Your pelvis is made up of three bones that fit together like a sphere. And so you have a floor of that sphere, which is referred to as your pelvic floor. And if that pelvic structure is not straight because you've landed on your rear end, or maybe you've landed on your hands and knees, or maybe you slammed on the brake to avoid an accident and that force drove your hip into your pelvis and created a disturbance in the geometry of your pelvis. So that's the beginning of what we would call disease. It's the beginning of a lack of integrity of the structural components that are necessary to have optimal tissue and fluid function. And so the body's super complicated because it's made up of basically three large cylinders, your pelvis being one of them, your thoracic cage, which includes the ribs and the spine, is the second, and the third is your head and neck. And those three geometric modules work together to do basically everything. And the more they're working together, the better everything is. Or another way of saying that, if there's a disturbance in the relationship between these three modules, that disturbance is going to get amplified into the system and cause poor motion, irregular motion, poor fluid flow, tissue congestion, you know, illness and disease. That's the basic premise of osteopathy right there.
Yeah, and that can manifest years later, right?
And it typically does. And so this is interesting because the human body, mind, spirit, is amazingly resilient, and it can compensate for a lot of these insults to the basic geometry of the body for maybe 20, 30 years before it starts to decompensate. So there's a lot of compensating mechanisms that can be identified as muscles that are working asymmetrically, structures that are not exactly symmetrical left to right or front to back, but the body, mind, spirit is able to compensate for those without really the person even knowing there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And by the time people come to see me, you know, I have to be a bit of a detective and look at what's going on in their body structure system. And I say, oh, well, here, I found this. And they, oh, yeah, I guess when I was born, I had so-and-so. Or when I was three, I fell down the stairs on my rear end and, you know, I couldn't walk for a week. So people heal from these injuries. You know, the bruise goes away, the cut goes away, the broken bone heals. But the disturbance in the relationship between the structural components of the body do not go back to the normal unless someone comes along to fix them, or if the person is very savvy and understands a little bit about how to do it themselves. Perhaps yoga is somewhat helpful in doing that. But even people who do yoga need my help. So it's not a definite solution either, yoga, that is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I've experienced that myself as well. And very often on a Monday, I would end up in my previous osteopathic doctor's office after making a bad fall skiing or snowboarding. And yeah, it was very helpful. So osteopathy is we've talked about it, it's a holistic, whole body approach to healthcare. And why is that a good thing? I know it's an obvious question, but I still want to hear your answer there.
Well, you know, I could just repeat what I said, but I think I'd rather talk about something else. I mean, I'll answer the question in a different way, in other words. Osteopathic practitioners in America are fully licensed doctors. So in America, we go to medical school and we learn everything that MDs learn. But in addition, we learn how to use our hands to assess and treat problems with this body geometry that I was just referring to. So, you know, we provide an additional tool to help our patients deal with health issues, but also to strengthen their own wellness and healing so that they can prevent getting ill in the first place. But osteopaths, you know, write prescriptions, they order tests, they look at your blood work. And so, you know, they're integrative physicians. Holistic is a good word too, but they're integrative because they integrate what's standard in the medical profession with things that are a little different. Yeah. Osteopaths in other countries are not fully trained physicians. That doesn't mean they're not as good, but they just have a different training. Typically, every country has its own organization of an osteopathic society, let's say, and their standards for their education and clinical practice are all slightly different. But generally, osteopaths around the world learn methods of using their hands to assess and treat this body structure geometry that I was referring to at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then there's something called osteopathic manipulations that require highly specialized palpatory skills. So palpatory,
yes,
to assess and treat the health of the patient. So can you tell us what exactly you're doing and what's happening when you're doing that? It certainly looks like magic to me, and you told me I was not the only one saying that. So can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, of course. That's super important and very fundamental to how osteopaths do what they do. And it's like learning a new language, quite frankly, a palpatory language. And it takes a while to develop the palpatory skills to feel these things. Let's just take, for example, what most physicians have to do. They have to learn how to percuss a liver, which means there's a technique to tap on the patient's abdomen in such a way that you can tap and hear and feel the solidness of the liver, and you can locate the general border of the liver. That's a skill that all physicians learn, and it takes time. It's not something you can just do once and get it. Similarly, we're feeling the texture of the skin when we do an osteopathic exam, and there's many different qualities that the skin has to differentiate between moist and dry, smooth and rough, regular or irregular. And then there's different layers of tissue from the most superficial down, you know, three or four layers of different muscles that are in the body between the surface of the body and the deepest bones. And so osteopaths learn to differentiate these different layers and how they feel and whether there's something abnormal in that layer is a palpatory perceptual skill. And it takes a few years, frankly, to develop this skill and many years to develop it to the level of someone who would be more masterful at the osteopathic manipulative medicine that you're referring to.
Yeah, and not every DO is using that, right?
So DO means Doctor of Osteopathy in this country, but in other countries, they're also called DOs. It's a little confusing, and theirs refers to Diploma of Osteopathy.
Oh.
But yeah, many osteopaths in America, osteopathic physicians, choose to not go into the manipulative medicine aspect. They all have to learn it, but then once they graduate, they might do a residency in pulmonology or neurology or surgery, and they may never actually practice osteopathic manipulative medicine. And that's just the way it is because we're fully licensed. People can specialize who are osteopaths in any medical specialty. So I'd say about 10 to 20% of people in America with the DO after their name, 10 to 20% of them are doing something like I'm doing, where they're mostly focused on the structural exam and the manipulative medicine prescription.
Yeah, and so that's not much, right?
That's not much. Well, you know, there's probably 150 to 200,000 osteopathic physicians in America. So, you know, 15,000 to 20,000 of them are using their hands on a regular basis, mm-hmm, in this manner.
Yeah, I see. So you also talk a lot about that osteopathy works with the body's fluid membrane matrix. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, that's a really great term. So it's complicated because you have to understand a lot about the human being and the embryology of humans, meaning what we go through in the womb to become a human being and to be viable to exist outside of the womb. And so most people know that we're mostly water. 70 to 80% of us is water. But it's hard to find that water if you just, you know, are looking for a cup that's filled with water. We're not that kind of water. Uh-huh. The water that we are is in a different state. It's called a colloidal system. It's like jello or pudding. Uh-huh. And so inside of our bodies, we have bones and we have organs. But kind of what holds us together is this gluey substance that's like pudding. And it's a colloidal matrix that's mostly water. And there's a lot of tissue in there and cells that circulate. Most of the flow of this fluid is occurring in the connective tissue. This gluey matrix that is mostly water is how most of the fluid in our body moves around. There are blood vessels, of course, and that's another way that fluid directly moves through our system so that we oxygenate our tissues. But that's not the predominant way that fluid functions in our body. It's more in this other matrix that I was referring to, that's an intracellular matrix, connective tissue. And as we get older, this connective tissue can get injured. Part of an injury involves the tightness that then develops in the body, and part of that tightness is in the connective tissue matrix. And when it gets tight, it's more like it's not like pudding anymore. It's more like crab meat or something that's a little firmer, and the fluid doesn't flow as well in a system that has too much tightness or resistance. And so part of the goal of osteopathic medicine is to find these areas in the three-dimensional matrix of the body that are too tight, that are theoretically not allowing for proper flow, and treat them in a way that loosens them up, gives them more of a flow and a functionality that is, with greater compliance and less tension. It's a little more complicated than even that. And I want to just say a little more about embryology, because people don't understand embryology generally. When you're conceived in your mother's womb, you start out as a streak of fluid, a movement of fluid that then starts to grow membrane cells that are membranous. And that membrane elongates and becomes a tube. And that tube eventually becomes your nervous system. And then everything pops out of that tube. You have a pouch that comes out that forms the heart and the lungs, and another pouch that becomes your intestines. But this initial tube is super important because it becomes what we refer to as your midline, which is your brain and your spinal cord. And there's a special fluid that is contained within that tube that eventually becomes what we call cerebrospinal fluid, which is the fluid that your brain makes. So your brain is making this fluid once you're born, and that fluid, it has a very important nutritive function, and it's vital to creating the potency that I was referring to, that actually you were referring to when you asked me that question about potency. This is a term that is very important for assessing the vitality of the patient. How potent is this fluid system in their central nervous system? And we can palpate this. And so the human body is 70 to 80% fluid. And this fluid has a pulse. And the pulse is very similar to the ocean in that, A, it's salt water, it's not spring water. And B, it has a to and a fro, or an ebb and a flow, or tidal movement like the ocean. And so this tidal movement is something we can palpate with our hands. It originates from the cerebrospinal fluid production in the brain. And it can be palpated all over the body, this pulse, this tidal movement. And it's the basis for which osteopaths can assess and treat this fluid body that we're starting to discuss now in this interview.
Okay, so small question. Is that the same pulse as the acupuncturists are talking about?
Okay, so that's a different pulse. Uh-huh. This is a fluid pulse that I'm talking about. And pulse is just a similar word that they use for what they're palpating, which I have no idea
what it is. Each organ has a pulse.
They say it's the meridian, the energy meridians of the body. But energy meridians are difficult to dissect out and isolate. I'm not saying they don't exist, but when you do a cadaveric study of a body, you don't find the energy system.
Yeah.
If you're doing an operation on a living body, you can see the fluid. You can see the fluid moving in and out of the surgical field. If you're doing a brain surgery or a spinal surgery, you can actually see this fluid. So it's a little different because it's a fluid phenomenon, whereas the acupuncture is more of a meridian associated with different organs in the body, that each organ has its own energy.
Yeah.
I don't claim to understand Oriental medicine, Chinese medicine, but it's a different term, pulse, from what they use.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. And so this water that we are made of, it's probably the same thing as what Dr. Pollack talked about when he talks about easy water, the exclusion zones water. You're familiar with that? He also talks
about, you know, his book on the four phases of water is a little more detailed in terms of looking at how water behaves in different settings in our body. Blood vessels are where you see the EZ zone, for example. But we don't really have a way of palpating that osteopathically. What we're palpating is the overall movement of the central nervous system, the volume of that CSF, cerebrospinal fluid, is something that increases and then decreases in a rhythmic fashion. And we can feel the expansion of the entire fluid body and then the correlating contraction of that fluid body. So I don't know that what you're talking about is something that has a way of translating into the osteopathic language. But it's fascinating nonetheless. I read his book and I think it's groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then based on my experience, I remember it's a little bit like cranial osteopathy or the work you do on the sacrum. It seems like when that fluid is a little sluggish, to use a very common term, what you do is you shake it a little bit, you give a little impulsion, and that will start the movement again. Is that correct or not?
I mean, generally that is correct, but since we're taking the time to talk about this, I would say it a little differently.
Uh-huh.
You can palpate this fluid function, which is the fluid movement that's described in cranial osteopathy. You can palpate it anywhere on the body, but the sacrum is a particularly important location because it's at the tail end of the central nervous system and it's hanging from the brain through a system of membranes that surround the brain, surround the spinal cord, surround every nerve, and then attach to the sacral base. And these membranes are called meninges. So most people don't know what meninges are, but most people have heard of meningitis.
Yep.
Meningitis is an infection of your meninges. And most people have heard of that. It's a very thick layer of membrane that surrounds your brain and your spinal cord. And it has a very firm attachment to your sacrum. So when the whole system is moving and fluctuating, expanding and contracting, the sacrum has a very distinct up and down movement in response to the the membranes movement through the entire central nervous system. And so that's why osteopathic treatment for the sacrum is so important, because it helps to mobilize the entire midline system. It's like an anchor at the bottom of the system. And if the anchor is too heavy and sluggish, it's literally creating a drag that affects the whole system. And I'd say the sacrum being tight is something that causes a lot of different clinical syndromes that you wouldn't necessarily expect, like headaches, sinus congestion, dizziness, ringing in the ears, problems with the TMJ. And so people who understand this will frequently refer to osteopaths. I have a dentist that I work with. He refers me people, almost 100% of the people he wants to do orthodontics to, he has them see me first, because he believes that the tension from their sacrum and from their ribs and in their neck, all the different places we treat, is interfering with the bones that he is trying to move when he tries to move their teeth. And so he wants that all as balanced as possible, so that his job is easier, and that once he's done moving teeth, the teeth don't move back to where they were when he started.
Yeah.
The sacrum is super important in that whole problem-solving matrix. That's how connected the body is.
Yeah, and I remember having that checked by my previous osteopathic doctor as well a long time ago to see if my teeth would move. And he said, yeah, they could move, but if they move, it will also change other things in your life. And maybe you don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, when you start moving their teeth, other things start to happen to them that no one counted on. Like they start getting headaches or neck pain, or their stomach bothers them. And it's because you're moving the whole system when you move the teeth. And the more you can get in the rest of the body to balance out and be balanced, you know, with respect to these three modules that I talked about, the less you're going to have unexpected reactions when you start moving teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now everybody needs to have perfectly aligned teeth, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, that's certainly one point of view. If you're an orthodontist, you certainly think that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I think people can have a certain amount of dysfunction in their teeth and the rest of their body for that matter, and still function just fine. It's a matter of trying to reduce the things that are really problematic that create a big drag, you know, on the body. Mm-hmm. I think if you can address those major chunks of poor geometry, let's just say, then even if you don't have it perfectly aligned, it's, for most people, it's good enough. And it's never going to be perfectly aligned. And so the closer to perfect you can get, obviously, the better. But I think some people are a little bit too overly concerned about getting everything perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not necessary, in other words, to get everything perfectly aligned.
Yeah, good. So does the water that we consume play a role in our health? You know, there are different, lots of different kinds of water.
Yeah, water has become a very tuned. There's a lot of different kinds of water available on the market. It used to be you just turn on the sink faucet and you drank water. But now we have purified water, and we have water that is...
new water.
Hydrogen ions in water. But the kind of water that I like to talk about is actually ocean water.
Mm-hmm.
I actually drink a little ocean water every day, and I think everyone should. Okay, I don't go to the beach and just fill up my jug of water with beach water, because it's not clean. It needs to be filtered. But our own fluid system, when you compare it to ocean water, is nearly identical to ocean water. It's not spring water. We have all kinds of electrolytes and minerals in our body's water. And not only do we have every type of mineral on the planet in our body, to some degree, it's also in the ocean. And the proportion of those minerals the ratios of the different minerals relative to one another are the same in the ocean when you analyze it as they are in what we call human plasma, which is the water that's left over in your blood when you take out the red and white cells. So the amount of chloride to sodium or magnesium to manganese, the amount of that is exactly the same ratio between the ocean and the human plasma. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's interesting. But if you think about it, if we came from the ocean, then that makes perfect sense. We'd have to carry around in our own fluid body the marine environment that we came from. And in fact, that's why I drink a little ocean water every day, because it's a little bit of the mother fluid that helps preserve the right balance of all those minerals and electrolytes in my body. So it's filtered, like I said. It also comes from a particular place in the ocean where there are plankton. So plankton is everywhere in the ocean, but it blooms, huge blooms, you know, hundreds of miles long of plankton. The plankton take the minerals that are in the ocean and fix them and alter them in such a way that they become organic minerals that we can consume. And so if you harvest the water that you're going to drink, the seawater, from a plankton bloom, then the minerals in that water are going to be organic minerals and you'll be able to assimilate them. And so there are a couple of companies that are harvesting ocean water in plankton blooms and then filtering it and testing it in a lab to make sure it's safe. And so I do recommend that product very highly. It's my favorite supplement. And, you know, because I'm an osteopath, I can feel the effect of that water. When someone consumes the ocean water, I can feel a difference in their fluid body, in the pulse of this to and fro movement that is part of the fluid body and the palpation of it.
I think is that it is a drug-free approach to certain problems like pain, which is one of the main reasons people see osteopathic doctors typically. So, and a lot of people don't know that osteopathy is the best alternative to painkillers or anti-inflammatory drugs, in my opinion. Can you talk about that and maybe discuss the origin of pain? Is it inflammation? Is it something else? And what you on that topic?
Yeah, I think I would say that pain medicines are maybe the best alternative to osteopathic manipulation. But that's just because I practice this every day, and every day I have mostly patients who have some kind of pain. And what I do seems to help them more than anything else. And so, you know, they use medicine as well if they need it, but hopefully the primary anti-pain program is what I'm doing with them. And then the exercises and maybe dietary practices that they use, you know, in their personal life to help maintain that. But pain is a very complicated subject. It's a very subjective thing, and so it's difficult to quantify pain. But generally, most people experience pain in areas where they have inflammation. Arthritis is a term that means joint inflammation. It's a pretty general term. Everyone has some amount of wear and tear in their joint system, and so everyone has a little bit of arthritis. And that is the beginning of focus for pain. Everyone responds or reacts to that differently. But essentially, if you can slow down the process of wear and tear by straightening out the different compartments of the body, by restoring the proper geometry to the body, you know, it makes a huge difference in the amount of wear and tear, the amount of pressure that's being applied on certain sensitive areas, joints being the primary area of focus, but also muscles, tendons, ligaments, capsules around joints. Those are all potentially pain-producing areas. Mm-hmm. So a combination of restoring the geometry of the body and providing the right fluid nutrition to keep the body from being dehydrated, which is another cause of inflammation and pain, dehydration, and nutrition. So, you know, a lot of foods are pro-inflammatory. Yeah. They stoke the flame of inflammation in your joints, in your muscles, in your gut. And we're learning more and more about this. And a lot of people are seeking approaches that have a lot of success that involve changing their diet. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not a nutritionist or a nutrition expert. I use a little bit of nutrition in my practice because it just makes sense. But I think there's a whole reservoir of different protocols and treatments that involve dietary changes and supplements that are worth investigating for someone interested in reducing their overall pain experience and inflammatory burden. Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I think, is the systemic enzymes.
Yeah, I like systemic enzymes. Basically, your body uses enzymes that it produces on its own to help break down inflammatory complexes and food complexes. But taking an additional supplement, for example, that has systemic enzyme formulation can help to sort of bolster the troops, if you will, of enzymes in the body that are breaking down, you know, inflammatory producing substances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
some people eat a lot of pineapple and papaya. And, you know, those are foods that are very high in digestive enzymes. And they help to clean your gut. And the gut is one of the highest areas of inflammation in the whole body. So, you know, that's a healthy practice, eating a lot of pineapple and papaya, just mm-hmm. as an example. Mm-hmm.
So if we go beyond pain, we know it's not the only problem where osteopathy can help. So what else? What are the other most interesting areas where osteopathy can be helpful? I remember a few myself. So if for everybody who has a car accident, I heard it's really important to like unwind the effect of the shock from the body, something like that. Babies who get, you know, manipulated a little not appropriately when they are born, and it's really important to fix their skull, even if it's years later. After surgery, I remember using that because my liver was totally not functioning, not flowing. So it was important to get rid of the poison from the anesthetics. And those examples, but you can talk about whatever you want.
Well, again, it goes back to geometry and that fluids flow more efficiently through structures that are geometrically sound. If there's a twist in a cylinder, that's going to create something called turbulence. And it's going to cause the flow of fluid in that tube to be less than optimal. If you add to that the pelvis, for example, if it's twisted, then the ability of the fluid in the feet and legs, for example, to flow properly into the pelvis is disturbed because the pelvis is not receiving that fluid properly, and it creates a backup of fluid that slowly causes swelling in the legs. And so, again, it's a matter of looking at where the geometry is being affected, where it's disturbed. Finding out where along a cylinder there's too much tension and connective tissue tension, and ironing that out, releasing that focus of tension. Anytime you have an accident, anytime you're born, there's a lot of force that's directed into the body that the body can't completely deal with without getting compressed and twisted. So things that decompress and untwist the body are going to help to restore the proper geometry and loosen up this connective tissue so that fluid flows through it more efficiently. I mean, it's really quite simple and elegant. It's easier said than done because this tension exists in a lot of different layers of the body. It's difficult to find, and it's difficult to completely eradicate it, but that's pretty much what osteopaths do. Mm-hmm.
So all this is connected to sacred geometry, what, you know, what's called sacred geometry in architecture, and it seems like it's a little related.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If our bodies are temples, then the more geometrically sound, the better they're going to function to resonate this fluid pulse that I'm talking about. If there's other pulses that are operating in our body that are energetic, you know, our body is going to be a better resonating ground for those things as well. And, you know, so body, mind, spirit, it's all one package. And all of that is impacted in a positive way when we restore these qualities to the geometry of our body.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so I think a question I can ask you is, I've always been curious about the relationship between emotions and health, and also between people's beliefs and health. So based on what you've seen in your practice, do you see a connection between emotions, beliefs, and health? And if so, what would be that connection? Can you talk about that?
Sure. So, I mean, one of the more common things we see are trauma induced problems, people getting in accidents and, you know, getting jammed, twisted, broken, you know, torn. And so when we put our hands on people and start to restore the structural integrity of those areas, frequently there are memories that people have involved with what put that force there in the first place. Muscles have memories. Muscles are connected to nerves that are connected to the brain. And so when you start working with some of these patterns of tension, frequently people will re-experience the actual trauma or a memory related to the trauma or emotions related to that trauma that are stored in the body in various ways that we don't completely understand, but nonetheless we know are true. And I've had people, you know, in the middle of a treatment, you know, very clearly remember exactly what happened, where they were, what they were experiencing. There was fear, there was shock, you know, there's different qualities that are more on emotional qualities that are involved in many of these traumas that are part of the entity that's stuck in the body and that we're digging out. So sometimes people have strong emotions related to the treatment coming out of their body for a day or two after the treatment, for example. Mm-hmm. But there's more that has to do with the special quality that organs seem to have, maybe similar to the Chinese medicine idea that organs each have their own quality of energy that goes through the whole body. We have a system of diagnosing and treating organ dysfunction. And organs seem to be more associated with emotions than any other physical part of the body. And so when an organ is tight or twisted, which it can easily become, treating it tends to have a more profound impact on the emotional character of the person than generally other areas of the body that we might be treating. Mm-hmm. And there are certain organs that are associated with certain emotions. You know, the lungs have an association with sadness and grief.
Yeah.
This is something that is consistent with what they say and talk about in Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. Generally, you know, we would say that is true about lungs. The heart, of course, love and the heart go together, but loss goes with the heart energy. And so when you experience a loss, that could show up in the heart as a disturbance in the movement of the heart. Okay, what is this movement of the heart or the lungs or any organ that I'm referring to? Very important, because organs all move. And we call this movement motility. And it's a movement that starts as an embryo. Your organs, well, they move in response to breathing, for one. When you breathe, everything expands. Your organs have to move. But each organ in the body has what we call an inherent motility, which is an inherent movement towards the midline of the body and away from the midline of the body. It's a very subtle movement. It's a slow movement, maybe, you know, 5 or 6 cycles per minute of movement towards the midline, away from the midline. And so we can palpate this and we can treat it. And when we do, it frees up the energy that is stuck in that organ. The kidneys can be stuck. The intestines can be stuck. The liver, the brain, of course, the pelvic organs, the pancreas. Each of these organs can be assessed and treated osteopathically. Mm-hmm. And it tends to go along with functional problems. Obviously, you know, if your stomach is twisted, it might affect your ability to digest your food, and it does. If your small intestine is twisted, it might interfere with how the gallbladder empties and the pancreas empties digestive enzymes into your small intestine. It can impact how your small intestine functions. And so restoring the organs is a interesting and very helpful practice that osteopaths, you know, provide. Not all osteopaths do this kind of manipulation. It's called visceral manipulation. Mm-hmm. Not all of us are trained in it, but a lot of us are, and it's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. So most people are familiar with chiropractic work. I think you can explain the difference, right, with osteopathy?
I can try. Uh-huh. First of all, the training of chiropractors is different. They are considered physicians, and they have licensure in some states to practice as physicians in a limited manner. I don't know enough about each chiropractic state's chiropractic rules, but in some states, they're actually able to prescribe certain kinds of drugs. But I think your question is really more in terms of the technique. Chiropractors do a type of manipulation. Yeah. And osteopaths do a manipulation. And in some cases, they're very similar. Osteopaths all learn how to do a very heavy manipulation that pops your joints. It's called high velocity, low amplitude manipulation. We all learn how to do that as osteopaths. And most of the historical discussions that have to do with chiropractors are that they were an offshoot of osteopaths. So a couple of osteopathic students, Palmer in particular, broke off and started their own program, and they called it chiropractic. But the manipulation that I do is very different, and most osteopaths who are specializing in manipulation, they do way more than just the high velocity kind of pop them. Twist them and pop them kind of maneuver. And so that requires a little different understanding of the different tissues that are making up the body framework system, ligaments, tendons, muscles, nerves, etc. But it goes back, I think the best way to explain it, to my previous analogy of the 3 geometric movement modules of the body: the pelvis, the rib cage, and the head and neck. And so when I treat someone, I'm trying to restore the relationship between these 3 modules. So let's say I find that the sacrum is out of place. Yeah, I could pop the sacrum back into place, but I'm actually looking for something more effective, because if the sacrum is out of place, there's a correlating place in the body that is twisted in relationship to the sacrum. So let's say I landed on my tailbone. My sacrum is jammed, but it turns out the force from that impact traveled and ended up in the right side of my rib cage, because that's what forces do when they impact your body. They travel. So there's a place in the body that the force impacted or entered the body, and then there's a place where the force traveled to or ended up in the body. And in the kind of manipulation I do, it's important to identify those 2 areas and treat them together, so that you can peel away or remove completely the force vector that is then part of the body that is an abnormal and perhaps pathologically mediated vector that the body would be better off without. So I try to pull the whole vector out of the body. And in order to do that, I have to identify which parts of the body are involved in the disturbance and then restore the relationship between those two or maybe even three parts of the body that were involved in the impact.
Mm-hmm. So it's more holistic than just focusing on a symptom.
It's more holistic, it's more dynamic. You know, it takes a little different understanding of how an injury is established and how it sets up patterns in the body and understanding the different parts of the body that can be involved in an injury. Mm-hmm. The connective tissue that I was referring to earlier, the colloidal matrix of the body, the fascia is another name for it, the glue that holds the body together, will also frequently be the site of where tension forces take up residence in the body. And so just popping something back into place doesn't necessarily address the three-dimensional tension pattern that is in that connective tissue. And so there are specific techniques, myofascial release, for example, that work specifically with addressing tension in the connective tissues and removing them. Mm-hmm. Those are osteopathic techniques.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So I think we are getting to the end of all the topics I wanted to talk about, but I still have a few questions for you. So what are your top three recommendations for people to live a long and healthy life? You've given us one already with the marine water. What else do you have?
Well, I've given you two because the other one would be receiving osteopathic care.
I agree.
You know, and I think the third one would be, you know, learning how to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, people don't really think about that. And unfortunately, we have very few classes in school that teach us anything about how our bodies work. But there's a very good book called Breathe that has recently been written. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. And the author is escaping me at the moment. Maybe it's a two-year-old book, Breathe. It's a fantastic book. It goes into great detail about breathing, its function, its history, culturally, how different civilizations think about breathing and exercises to do to focus on your breathing, to enhance your breathing. Very important to breathe properly.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, and then another kind of basic question, how do you find a good deal for people who are not living in the San Francisco Bay Area or even in Northern California?
Well, there's a lot of DOs around, and they could be in any metropolitan area. That's the most likely place to find them. But there's a couple of academies that are worth looking at. The people who do what I do are mostly members of a group called the American Academy of Osteopathy. And if you go to academyofosteopathy.org, you'll get to their website, and they have a search engine. You can look for an osteopath that does manipulation, you know, in your area. The other group is a subsidiary of that group called the Cranial Academy, or the Osteopathic Cranial Academy. I believe they changed their name to the Osteopathic Cranial Academy. And that's another excellent referral source, specifically for osteopaths that do cranial osteopathy, which is probably a good idea to see an osteopath that manipulates, but also has been trained in the cranial concept. That would be my recommendation, to go to the Cranial Academy. And they have a search engine on their website as well.
Yeah.
If you don't have access to that, or you're just, you know, finding out that there's an osteopath in your town, you could call their office and talk to their office about what their osteopathic physician does. And so the questions you want to ask are, you know, does he or she do, you know, osteopathic manipulation, and what percentage of patients get osteopathic manipulation, and does he or she practice cranial osteopathy? So a yes answer, or, you know, 100%, 90%. Those are the answers you want to hear to those questions to make a good choice as to someone that's going to most likely be a very skilled practitioner in terms of the osteopathic manipulative medicine component.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. And for people who live in the Bay Area, what's the best way to find you, maybe?
Well, I can be Googled, Harry Friedman, D.O. My office is in Los Gatos. But I would say the same way, if you just go to that same search engine on academyofosteopathy.org or cranialacademy.org or osteopathiccranialacademy.org, I think is what it is. You know, anyone in this area should come up. You can kind of tell if you look at the yellow pages. Okay, I don't think anyone gets the yellow pages anymore, but you can see from an advertisement or even a business card what kind of aspects of medicine this person is promoting. That's probably what they're doing. And so pretty much everyone that does manipulation as part of their osteopathic practice will advertise that.
Yeah.
You know, and the infants are a big part of a practice that is focused on cranial osteopathy. You'll find a lot of people who are treating newborns and infants. So that's another question. Does the doctor treat newborns and infants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we end, is there anything else that you think we should have talked about? Did we talk enough about cranial, do you think, or anything else?
I think we covered, you know, the things that I was thinking we should talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I can't think of something we really left out, but yeah. I'm sure we did nonetheless. You'll have to have me back a second time.
Yeah, that would not be a problem. No, I think it was really a really good, clear explanation. I'm sure people have learned a lot. I did. And so, Dr. Friedman, I'd like to thank you very much for spending time with us today. I hope listeners will be inspired by everything you shared with us. So thank you again. This is Brigitte Moucher with the Solari Wellness Series. Thank you for listening and take good care of yourself because it's more fun to be well.
Right on.